So, folks, welcome back. It's great to see everybody. We're going to be learning today on a new topic. So, we're starting a new section, which is called Elisha the Prodigy. So, we've witnessed the ascent of Eliyahu. Eliyahu Hanavi has now gone up to Shemaim, and there seems to be a void of leadership into which we see Elisha stepping. So that's going to be our next step. I'm trying to appreciate who Elisha is, how you operate in the vacuum. Right, and what is it like to be a leader after an Eliyahu? Can you match up to him? Can you not match up to him? Not so simple. So let's learn together as we start this new and fascinating topic. So without much further ado, I did send out the source sheets, but let me know if there's any problems. I'm gonna share a screen, and as I mentioned, hopefully we're gonna be able to be in person soon. So it'll be a little better on this front as well. So here we go. Let's learn. Welcome, Elaine. Good to see you. Mazal tov. Elaine just celebrated the bris of her grandson, Baruch. This within the shloshim for her father. Mazal tov, Mitzvah Hashem. She'll bring a tremendous amount of nachas, Elaine. So let's learn, folks. So I'm just going to put them mute just because of some of the background noises, but please feel free to jump in at any point in time. So here we go. We're going to actually only focus today on seven psukim, and those seven psukim give us a window into what it looks like post Eliyahu's disappearance, his ascent. So we're told about two incidents that occur at the end of Perek Beis and Melachim Beis, and they're very curious incidents, each incident by itself. Incident number one occurs from Psukim Yud Tes to Chof Beis, the first four Psukim, and here's what we hear. So remember, Elisha at this point in time has now come back, he's split the Jordan, he comes back into Israel proper, and he now is in the city of Jericho, and the prophets have searched for 3 days to find the body of Eliyahu unsuccessfully. Vayomru Anshei Ha'ir El Elisha, Hineinu Moshav Ha'ir Tov. So they tell him, look, it's a very nice place and we love the land and everything, but it's the water is bad for us and it's killing us. It's bringing miscarriage, whether that means, you know, in humans or in animals or in the crops, but it's not good. So he makes a suggestion. So he says, give me a new plate, place salt in it. V'yikhu elav, and he took the plate. V'yetzel motza ha'mayim, and he goes back to the source of the water. V'yomer kamar Hashem, refisi la'mayim o'ele, lo yihye misham od mavis u'mishakeles. I've healed the water, it's no longer going to be a cause for death and for sickness. V'yerufu ha'mayim, the water was healed, adayim azeh, until today. And we are told, Kedvar Elisha Shediber, as Elisha had spoken. Fascinating, right? So we have quite a description over here of Elisha's miracle. A lot of things that are worthwhile thinking about, contemplating when it comes to this. So let's look to exactly where it is that we're talking. So if you remember, in the east bank of the Jordan is where Eliyahu ascended, not too far from the Jordan, because it sounds like they were walking and talking when the chariot came to meet them. He now crosses the Jordan again, and there he is in Jericho. So this is where he is, right over here, and he's going to later on move on to Beis El. It's the second incident is going to occur there. Now it is interesting that this does bring about a great amount of tourism today. So in Jericho today, you can find an area which is called Elisha's Spring. It's called Elisha's drinking water, right? Which is this pipe over here, which is or in the more we'll call it, beautiful touristy kind of, you know, fountain. Jericho is considered the oldest city in the world, at least according to Jericho, and Elisha's spring fountain is over here. So it definitely looks like a nice photo opportunity. Whether this is the place that Elisha went to, we don't 100% know, but it is a fascinating observation. Nonetheless, he has a spring in Jericho, and it could ostensibly be the one that Elisha in fact healed. Okay, now for our purposes, we there are a few questions which are worthwhile considering, a few ideas which are worth thinking about, because it's not so simple as to what's really going on over here. So question number one, in trying to unpack this, is why is it in Jericho? What's the significance of this being in Jericho, that this is the time where he heals the water? So this takes us actually back to the another place where Jericho is mentioned. If you go back to the beginning or the end of Perek Yud Tezayin in Melachim Aleph, we know that just before enters Eliyahu, we have the description of Chiel. Chiel, during the times of Achav, built the Yericho, he built Jericho, and we know it was, even though there was a curse on Jericho, so he built it with the death of his son Aviram, and when he finished the city, he buried his youngest son, Seguv. So it was a tragic rebuilding of Jericho, and the reason why it was tragic, as the Tanakh emphasizes, is because it was the curse of Yoshua ben Nun. Yoshua put a curse on whoever rebuilds Jericho, that they would bury their children when rebuilding it. And nonetheless, Chiel did this, which is, you know, shows a certain degree of callousness, a certain degree of you know, lack of self-reflection, of care, of trust in God. So, you know, pretty sad state of affairs. Nonetheless, the very next pasuk that we hear about then is Eliyahu entering. Vayomer Eliyahu atishbi mitoshavei Gilad el Achav, chay Hashem Elokei Yisrael asher amadzi lefonov im yiyah shanim ha'ele tal motor ki im lefi devari. He says, you know what? I'm not going to allow there to be rain, to be dew, except when I say so, and it's going to be a 3-year famine, which Eliyahu declares. This is the first meeting we have of Eliyahu. This is the first time we meet Eliyahu in Tanakh, is right here. And it follows our introduction to the reign of Achav, where Achav's clearly demonstrated negativity as a ruler, and the epitome of, you know, sort of the lawlessness, the carelessness of society is Chiel building Jericho. I find it intriguing that in a certain sense, this is the parallel incident. Here we have Elisha, who's now just taken the mantle, literally the mantle, the Aderes Eliyahu. He now also is encountering the people of Jericho, and the people of Jericho are suffering. Why are they suffering? So the Radak does make a suggestion that it must have been a more recent ailment, because otherwise Eliyahu would have dealt with it. That's what the Radak says, al derech pshat. It must be that there's something in the water, there's some disease, and whatever it is. But the Radak then does quote Chazal, who disagree and say, no, this is actually an extension of the original curse on Chiel. Meaning to say, what happens? You have Chiel, who started the process, he started this bad building of Jericho, he was cursed. And every person who now lays a brick and builds an apartment and tends a garden in Jericho essentially is extending and adding to the curse of Chiel, which is why the water is impure. So it may even be an extension of the curse of Eliyahu to a certain degree. Meaning Eliyahu had said, I'm not allowing the water to fall because of what's going on in society, and the example of what's going on in society was Jericho. Now comes Elisha into society and they're still suffering under this curse of Yehoshua ben Nun, and it's affecting the waters of Jericho. And what's interesting is as opposed to Eliyahu, who declares a drought to stop the water, here he finds a solution to make the water sweet and drinkable. That's a fascinating, we'll call it, observation in terms of how different Eliyahu and Elisha are in terms of understanding and dealing with complex folks. And do you just curse them and remove all the water? Or do you say, no, we can deal with them. Let's try to work out a way we can make this work, even though they may not necessarily be the most upright and upstanding individuals. That's parallel number one. So to understand this event in context, it's to be parallel to Eliyahu's first interaction. Eliyahu's first interaction is with great justice, whereas the first interaction of Elisha is one of mercy, with the same constituents, it seems, as well. We move a little further. It's interesting. Let's take a look at source 5 for a moment. This is the source which deals with, it's a Medrash in Shmos Rabbah commenting on Parshas Beshalach. What is it talking about? It's describing the following incident. Actually, let's read the incident first, and then we'll look at the Medrash. The source appears in 6. Vayavol Marasa in Parshas Beshalach, Bnei Yisrael come to a place called Mara, which literally means bitter. V'layachlu lishtos mayim mimaran, they were not able to drink the waters of Mara, ki marim hem, because they were bitter. Alkein kara shema mara, that's why it's called bitter. Notice how many times the word mar appears in this pasuk. Right? Vayilonu ha'am el Moshe le'mor manishte, and they complained to Moshe, and they said, what are we going to drink here? Vayitzak el Hashem, vayareo Hashem eitz. And he called out to Hashem. Hashem showed him a stick or a limb of a tree. Vayashlech el amayim, and he threw it into the water. Vayimtzuk amayim, the water became sweet of shom, som loichoik umishpat v'sham niso. There they were taught certain laws, and there they were tested or proved. So that's the incident. The Medrash points out a very similar point is being made here in Melachim Beis and in Parashas B'Shalach. What's going on over here? Ki ele lo aruka loch. I will bring, says Yirmiyahu, a aruka. What's an aruka? An aruka means a healing. I will bring healing to you. What does the Medrash explain? Ein midaso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu k'midas basar v'dam. Hashem is not like a flesh and blood master or ruler. Basar v'dam shehu makob izemel umar peberitia. When it comes to a human being, when they create damage, they do so with a blade. And when they create healing, they do so with a bandage, with some sort of covering, tourniquet. Aval HaKadosh Baruch Hu. With the same vehicle that creates the pain is what creates the healing. So he describes, so the HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes that the it was something which was the actual bitterness which made the bitter water better. Okay, that is not a tongue twister. Amar Rabbi Levi, Hador Haya mar b'ma'asav. Actually, the generation were bitter in their deeds. Vayitzak al Hashem al eitz, vayareo Hashem eitz. Umaya, what tree limb was he throwing into it? Yesh omrim zayas, an olive branch. Yesh omrim arava, some say a willow branch. Yesh omrim hardufni haya, not sure what that branch is. Yesh omrim ikre te'enim v'ikre rimonim, however not levishlicho lamayim. So what's interesting is, so what seems to, and then it quotes our section here in Melachim, the same idea occurs when he throws the salt in. The point that Mitch seems to be making is that it wasn't that he threw in a little bit of sugar, you know, high and low, and that was what did the trick. It wasn't that he, you know, it wasn't a typical healing process or sweetening process. What it really was actually showing that a bitter tree limb, or in this case salt, is going to heal it. So if we just dig that a little deeper, that means to say that actually, as opposed to there being an external healing process, it's really an internal crucible. So sometimes in life we think, you know, why is it, God, why? Why did you do this to me, to us, or to them? Why was it necessary? It's just so difficult. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing us that actually it's the very bitterness which is the resolution to the bitterness itself, meaning to say the bitterness is necessary. It's the crucible of growth necessary for the person to go through. And that's what's going on over here, is this is how Hashem heals it. Something about this process was necessary for them, and that's the symbolism of this as well. It is also...
like a vaccine.
Right.
Created from the original illness.
Fascinating. Fascinating, right? So you're actually taking, in some forms of the vaccine, you're actually taking actually the disease itself and making the disease something which is positive, something which can protect us all as well, which is fascinating. There's another interesting thing which I think is also interesting. Yeah, not only is the Midrash capitalizing on the fact that these two incidents are in fact parallel in terms of Beshalach and Elisha's Yericho waters, and that they're being healed by something which is bitter. But what is also interesting over here is that the events themselves are parallel. Meaning, when did this event happen that the Bnei Yisrael came to Marah? It happened when they just left Yamsuf. The Kriyas Yamsuf happened. They just witnessed a huge miracle. They come now 3 days later. There's no water. They come to this place called Marah. And now they need the water sweetened. Isn't that the exact same episode? Here's Elisha splitting the Jordan, coming back across the Jordan, entering this place. The water is bitter. He's doing the same thing. Right? So clearly Tanakh is pointing out that sometimes after we've seen great miracles, we still complain, right? We still have an issue, which may come back to a fascinating pronoun, which is a little ambiguous in the sentence over here. When they came to Marah, it says in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, they weren't able to drink the water, Mimara Kimarimhem, because they were bitter. What's they? Who's the they over here in this Pasuk? So technically speaking, it refers to the water. Water's plural, Mayim. Samarim Heim, the waters are bitter. But there's another interpretation. Who could that pronoun be referring to? Could it be referring to Israel? It could be that they were in a state of bitterness. And when you're in a state of bitterness, everything's a problem. When you didn't get your coffee in the morning and you're a coffee person, then everything's bad. Everything's late. Everything's disorganized. Everything's chaotic because you're in a bad state. You don't feel great. So therefore, everything you look at is also not great. That's the same thing over here. So part of this is not so much even about the water as much as it is also about them. And that's part of how the process of refuah is the realization that the them is changeable. It's much easier to blame environment. It's much better to be able to say, well, you know, I was forced into the situation because X, Y, and Z happened to me, and I'm the victim of circumstance. But what happens when you realize that you actually own some of that? Not what happened, that's not your choice, but how you react to it is part of the actual, your perception of what's really going on. That's a very different perspective on things. So anyways, this is worthwhile thinking about. It's a learning moment in understanding Elisha's role as opposed to Eliyahu's role. That's number one. But it's also in terms of the people and how they relate to miracles, how they relate to themselves. It was all part of this, the package that we were seeing over here. We now move on to the next incident. And this next incident is much more of a disturbing incident, to say. Terrifying incident, no less. It's in three psukim. We're told now the next step that Elisha takes is Vayanishon Beis El. He now goes to from Beis El. V'hu ole ba'derech un'orim k'tanim yotzu min ha'ir. V'yis kal suboy v'yamru lo'y alei k'reach, alei k'reach. So he starts going to Beis El. So if you remember, that means to say he's going north, westwards into the land of Israel. And as he approaches the city, some small youth come out and they start mocking him. The word kales is an interesting word in that it can also mean to praise, right? La'alei u'la kales, we say in Pesukim Zimra, to praise Hashem. But it also can mean to mock. It's one of the words which has both meanings, opposites. Okay, and they say, how do they mock him? They mocked him by saying, Alei Kerea, come up, baldy, meaning it seems that Elisha did not have so much hair. So they were talking to him in this way, oh, Mr. Bald has come to town. And that's how they're mocking him. Okay. So Elisha turns, he looks behind them and he sees them. He curses them with the name of God. Two female bears, come out of the forest. And they rip apart 42 of these children. It's a very tragic incident. And he went to the Mount Carmel, retracing the steps of Eliyahu, and then he goes to Shomron. So, I mean, it's an unbelievable incident, I mean, in so many ways. On the one hand, we've just witnessed, there's many renditions of this very tragic incident, but there's many, it does seem, at a first blush, that this seems, first of all, very much in contrast with the previous story. The previous story was Elisha demonstrating mercy, demonstrating patience with the people of Jericho. And now he seems to be demonstrating a very, keen sense of justice, not willing to forego anything. And that's number one. But number two is, it seems a little extreme, So they're mocking him, children mock. So why is this so serious? What's the symbolism of this story? Is a good question. So let's take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara in Sota Daf Mem Vav Beis describes this particular incident and tries to help us understand it. So there's a few things that the Gemara adds to our conception. Number one, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Meir. So we're told, Kol She'ena Melave Umislave Kilu Shofech Damim. Anybody who does not escort one's guests is considered as if they've shed blood. Whose responsibility was this? It should have been the people of Jericho should have escorted Elisha, thereby avoiding this whole incident. So there seems a part of the blame is also placed on the people of Jericho. Fascinating. And then it goes describes this. Okay, the Gemara says Amar lo alei. What does it mean? Why is it that they're calling him bald? Alei shekrachta aleinu es hamakom. you made the place bald for us. What does that mean? What's the real accusation that's going on over here? You made the place bald. So take a look at Rashi. Rashi explains in this Gemara. Shekrachta l'nezamakam. Shekeshayua mayim haro'im. Ha'isa parnasoseinu la'avi mayim limkor. Where do these kids come from? They come from a neighboring village. The neighboring village had one industry that the entire village depended on, and that was Poland Spring Water. Now, they didn't call it Poland Spring in those days. It was actually a different brand, but it was the water supplier for Jericho, because Jericho had bad water. Every tragedy is an opportunity, isn't it? And so they found their way of getting Parnassa through the needs of Jericho. Now comes along Elisha, and he improves society, and there's no longer polluted water in Jericho. So they say, wait a second, you have made us bald. You've taken away our jobs, our water supply industry, our factories, our delivery, all the amenities for our workers and the hotels for those who visit are now closing down overnight. Why? Because Elisha, you decided to take away jobs from our middle class working society. How could you? And this is also a very important teachable moment, is that when you see people who are disgruntled and get upset, and a lot of times they have all kinds of explanations and disguises as to what they're truly trying to say. A lot of times it just comes back down to their parnosa, right? It's like, I just need, their parnosa was unsettled, so they feel badly done by. So that's what's going on over here. So the one thing is that here are people who are attacking the miracle that Elisha performed, which really makes society better because of their own personal interest. That's a very sad state of affairs, and it's a state of affairs that we witness every day, all the time. Most of the problems in a Western society, I would make the following statement, is that most of the problems that we encounter are not problems from without, but problems from within, with people who are too self-centered to appreciate the greater needs of society. How could you do this to me? How could you change this policy, which is better for society because it upsets my particular industry? That's where we are. We're too narcissistic to actually appreciate that there is something more than us. So these are the people over here. You took away our parnasa, Elisha. The people of Jericho are no longer dying. Okay, but we had a parnasa at least. So that's another thing, which sort of just tells you a very corrupt nature. It's a very corrupt expression of society. The Gemara goes on further. Rabbi Lazar, Amar Rabbi Lazar would say, "Sheminu'urim mina mitzvos." So these children were empty of mitzvos. Show you mikatnei emuna. They were, so to speak, lowly of emuna. It's interesting. I actually left out one paragraph in the Gemara here. The Gemara also makes the suggestion that they were born. They were conceived of on Yom Kippur, all these children. Now, that's an interesting thing, meaning to say Yom Kippur is a day where children should not be conceived. It's one of the five prohibitions of Yom Kippur. And these children were all, so to speak, brought into existence on Yom Kippur. Fascinating. That's another explanation the Gemara gives. And finally, the Gemara concludes the following. Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha Amar Bloris Ra'a Lahem Ke'emoriyim. He saw the way they wore their hair was with Emorite style. It was the way that the Amorites wove their hair. Now, that doesn't just mean to say that they were just trying to keep up with the times and they want to look like, the magazine covers and the pictures of those folks in the barbershops. That's regular assimilation, which we deal with today. Bloriz actually the hairdo would be reflective of serving Avodah Zarah. So this is clearly, that means that these kids, these Israelite kids, are clearly involved in pagan worship, or at least their parents and their household is. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, there was not even what we'll call the residue of mitzvah left in them. Fascinating. Okay, so this is a sad description of this. So what the Gemara is trying to do, what you see the Gemara is trying to struggle with is how did Elisha have the right to declare upon them this decree and to curse them by the name of God? So you see a few things. Number one is that they're self-centered. They're expressions of a very self-centered society. The other aspect you see from here is that he looks to their future and their past. Their past was essentially they were born into this world through sin. All right, they were conceived upon an on Yom Kippur. Number two is he looked at their future, and he saw there was no hope for these folks. So it's bad. It's bad where they came from. It's bad where they're going. And what they represent now are corrupt values of short-sighted values in society. It still doesn't fully answer, but it gives us a little bit of context. Now let's go back to that kereach idea. So why is that? Why are they calling him a bald person? So on the most basic level, well, he was bald, so they're taking advantage as kids do. But there's more to it, as we saw. Maybe it's relating to their loss of parnasa. Another possibility is that it could be the following, could be a metaphor for the following idea. Remember, Elisha was a person who was very much endowed in society. He had a good family, he had a good estate to look after, and he abandoned all of that for Eliyahu. And what might be saying over here is, based on the following interesting parable, the Gemara describes, I'm sure we can think of many applications of this parable in life. The Gemara says the following, in Baba Kama Samachon Beis, Omer loch Elohim, em sholochem moshel ma'a dover doimer. I'm going to tell you an example of what this idea, the particular concept is in the Gemara there, but it applies to us as well. La'adam she'esh le'shtei noshim, the times of polygamy, a man had two wives. Achas yaldov, achas zekena. One is younger, one is older. Yaldo melaketes loy levonois. So the younger wife would try to pick out his white hairs. She wanted her husband to look younger, so she'd pluck out his grayer and white hairs. Zekena melaketes loy shecharos. But the older wife preferred him to look more distinguished and mature, so she'd pick out the black hairs. And the Gemara then concludes, Nimtza Kereach mikan umikan. He was bald from this side and that side. Which is obviously a metaphor for that. I think many times in life where we try to satisfy two ideas which are in conflict, and by doing so, we ultimately don't satisfy either of them. Right? This is obviously not referring to a specific situation, but it's referring to, so when it's talking about a man and wives, and it's talking about life. How many times do we try to make everything better and we make nothing better because we just aren't willing to commit to one in one direction or another? And that's what the good is being said over here. So I wonder if it could be possible that the accusation that's being leveled at Elisha is this exact idea, kereach mikan mikan. They said it twice, kereach, kereach, you're bald, meaning you abandoned your family, you abandon your estate, you abandon your future in that direction. You went with Eliyahu, and now Eliyahu's gone. So who are you? What have you achieved in life? Where are you really going? You've burned that bridge, and now you're left now with nothing. So it's not just a, we'll call it, regular mocking. It might actually be sort of a contesting the very essence of who Elisha is. But let's dig that a little further. It could even be that that it's even worse than that as well. So if you look at the words here, when it describes what Elisha does, it says, Vayifen acharov, he turned behind him, Vayir'eim, and he saw them. Now that could be referring to the idea that he's looking, you know, so to speak, what he's seeing, their past, their future, right, as the Gemara is describing it. But the idea of acharov, behind him, a number of them foreshim pick up on, and they say, you know what it's referring to? He's actually looking. Look, take a look at this, as the Abarbanel explains it. Lefish Eliyahu Ola LaShamayim Vaya Ish Ba. I want to come back to that in a second. They weren't just attacking in Source 11. They weren't just attacking Eliyahu Elisha himself. Ki im gam me Eliyahu Raboy Shnishar Acharov. Symbolically, Eliyahu, who was behind him, who had just ascended to heaven on the other side of the Jordan, that was who was behind him. And this was at the command of their parents. These children were educated by their bad families. And that's what he understood when he looked at them. He saw these were bad children coming from bad families. And that's why they're cursing not just the current prophet, but the previous prophet of God. All the achievements of Eliyahu, all the lessons that he taught, The moment he goes, boom, they're willing to dispense of it just like that. They're not interested. So Elisha is making a precedent with him as well. One other aspect which is fascinating is that there's a tradition, as Abarina points out, is Lefish Eliyahu Ala Lashamayim Vayaish Bal Se'ar. Eliyahu was a very hairy person. He grew his hair long. And that's sometimes an expression of you being very disconnected, sequestered from this world, like a Nazirite. So if you think about that, and now the contrast of what they're saying, Lachen Kanei Abal Asher Yubu Veisel Sholchut Zireim LaHalig LeElisha. That's why the people of, who are these children of, says Abarbanel? They were the people of Basel. Well, who lived in Basel? Basel was the shrine of the south. It's where they had this golden calf that people served up Avodah Zarah at. So the priests sent their children to go and now scorn Elisha. V'lirmoz al aliyas Eliyahu ha-shamayim ha-amru alei kereyach. Go up, O bald one. Rotzei lomar, ata encha beil bal sar ki Eliyahu ramcha ki kereyach ata. Alei ata ha-shamayim k'mo she'alahu. Can you go up to heaven? You bald one who can't even be like your master, you can't even fit into his shoes. So understand over here, there's a context over here. These aren't just children, you know, who are mocking a passerby. This is a concerted effort of discrediting the man of God by them and their families as well. This is a very serious incident, which shows you now an interesting thing is that on the one hand, Elisha is willing to deal with, you know, people not living up to the high standards of life. He's willing to bring them sweet water, even though they built a bad city. At the same time, he's not willing to compromise on the position, the office that he and his master took. It still doesn't fully explain, you know, these children, which is why just one last learning, the Limud today, and we're going to close with this, and that's the Chida. It usually takes more of a Kabbalistic track. He says, Amru Chazal, Nisabru Imon b'Yom HaKippurim, as I mentioned beforehand, they're the mothers conceived of these children on Yom Kippur, so they're born in sin. V'gamar b'chanina shoya zeb yishvil membeis karbonos de bolok. So Rabbi Chanina says a fascinating thing. It was because of the 42 sacrifices brought by Balak. So what does that mean? Pirshu Misham Rabbeinu HaArizal. So he quotes the Arizal, Rav Luria, who says, Ki membeis karbonos, and it's a hard concept to understand, that the 42 sacrifices, Garmu, Dechesheavru HaNeshamas Kedoshos Batakla Ne'eshku. So that that certain neshamas were, whatever this means, were trapped. There were 42 neshamas which were trapped by the force of the karbonos brought by Balak, who was trying to curse, and Bilam, who were trying to curse Israel. Membeis neshamas keneged membeis karbonos v'loi tachzireim haklipa, and they were trapped, and they were not released by this, called a negative force in this world, ad shetimtza bia asura. So these neshamas were only released into the world, attached to a body, through a conception which was through Isser, which was through prohibition. And therefore, so all the mothers who and fathers who conceived a child on Yom Kippur. These oppressed souls entered Membembeis Bios Asurois, B'Yom HaKippurim, and that's how they found access and entry to this world. So, therefore, he used the name of Hashem, which essentially killed the bodies and allowed the souls to return and to make their final journey. So, this is the necessary journey of the souls which are trapped by the malevolence of Bilam and Balak, which finally found restitution. They found a way into this world, and Elisha helped them find a way out of this world as well. So again, we don't do this spiritual calculus by ourselves, but the Arizal does. And what he's essentially saying is that, yes, it does seem tragic. And, you know, were this to happen today, this would be a terrible tragedy if we were to see this happening. Nonetheless, we should appreciate in this incident here that there's more to it than meets the eye. First of all, what they were saying, the context of what they were saying, what their attack means, who sent them, where they came from, and also the journey of the soul of those children. So it's a very complex moment, very complex, and it's a short incident in Tanakh. But nonetheless, it's an incident which gives us a little bit of a window into who this future leader is going to be, who this Elisha is going to be. This now sets us up to understand some of the incredible incidents which are going to occur, some of the miraculous events that are going to be brought to life by Elisha as well.